Jordan strongly condemns when it comes to racist attacks by Israel on Palestinians in occupied East Jerusalem. Al-Quds. Hospitals in India are begging for oxygen supplies as the country's coronavirus infections surge to unprecedented levels. And Indonesia recovers debris from a submarine that went missing with 53 crew members off the coast of Bali. Hello and welcome to Tehran. You've tuned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story this hour takes us back to Jordan, which has strongly condemned what it calls the racist attacks by Israel on Palestinians in the occupied East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Foreign Minister Ayman Safadi called for prompt international action to protect Palestinians. Safadi warned of dangerous consequences if Israel fails to stop the attacks. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement praised Palestinians for confronting the regime's forces, which were attacking Muslim worshippers. The Palestinian resistance group Hamas vowed to defend Al-Aqsa Mosque, Al-Quds, and its people. Israeli forces violently clashed with people protesting restrictions on their gatherings in the old city of Al-Quds during the fasting month of Ramadan. They fired water cannons as well as live ammunition to disperse protesters. Over 100 demonstrators were injured during the clashes. But 2 days after a long-range missile fired from Syria into Israeli territory, and the Israeli military is still concerned at the failure to intercept the rocket. According to Israeli military assessments, a Syrian anti-aircraft missile that exploded near the town of Dimona was not targeting the nearby nuclear site. However, the strike has cast doubt on the regime's defense power.
Israel has admitted its missile system tried but failed to intercept a Syrian missile that landed near the regime's top secret and most sensitive Dimona military nuclear site. Tel Aviv claimed the missile had landed in the Israeli-occupied territories as a result of errant Syrian anti-aircraft fire. Israeli Minister of Military Affairs Benny Gantz said the incident was under investigation. Experts, however, say the path of the projectile flew triggered the speculation that Dimona had been the target. They added that Israel insisted to keep the incident mysterious and it had imposed its own narrative on the media.
Israel tried to keep the incident mysterious. It imposed a specific story on the media that it was a surface-to-air missile and not surface-to-surface missile in an attempt, maybe, to hide the identity of who's behind the attack. Israel's so-called Iron Dome missile shield has failed to intercept and down the missile.
The Israeli military said that in response to the launch, it attacked several missile batteries in Syria, including the one that fired the projectile that struck its territory. Syria's state news agency said Syrian air defense intercepted the Israeli attack that targeted areas in the Damascus suburbs. Israeli officials were angered by what happened. Avigdor Lieberman, former Minister of Military Affairs and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's rival, said the regime had no functioning government and the power of the deterrence is spent.
The missile fire was kind of a surprise even on the political level. We read Israeli official statements. They were trading excuses, like Lieberman and others. The message was strong and clear, and it has affected Israel's strategic security image. It was an incident that was seen as a response to the various confrontations between Iran and Israel. Israel is not in its best situation. Israel feels threatened.
The incident happened only weeks after Israel said it had upgraded Iron Dome in a latest step in Middle East arms race. These upgrades included the ability to knock out threats at higher and lower altitudes and to strike longer numbers of incoming rockets could be fired mainly from Lebanon, Syria, and the besieged Gaza Strip. Tel Aviv has always praised its own Iron Dome missile defense system in repelling attacks, but this time it failed to intercept the Syrian-fired missile, which Israel said landed near its nuclear site, underscoring Tel Aviv's military fragility. Mora Kandil, occupied Albire.
Well, a Up next, hashtag trending brings you social media reactions to the news of that missile landing awfully close to Israel's secretive Dimona nuclear facility.
Hello and welcome to Hashtag Trending. I'm Sarah, and today we're not going to talk about the Iran nuclear deal directly, but trust me, our main story of the day is not unconnected to the recent events and the deal itself. So stay tuned, I'll explain to you. You see, it was only a week ago when a sabotage attack linked to Israel hit an Iranian nuclear facility in the heart of the negotiations over the revival of the 2015 deal. And just a few days later, a missile shot from Syria landed awfully close to Israel's secretive Dimona facility. Some say that was a message to Israel that its sensitive areas are not fortified. One of the biggest stakes from this attack was the fact that there was not much steam in this hyped-up Iron Dome missile shield. But that's not me saying this, but some social media users, like the first one, Europa Rising, says, "Funny how Israel thinks its glass house is made of iron. No more. Isn't that witty?" Moving on to the next comment by Resist the Criminal Globalist, it reads, "Another false flag by sneaky Israel. They are trying to make it look like someone is attacking them to create an excuse for their real intentions, that is, to invade other countries in the Middle East. People should not fall for this." And we have another comment by Angelis Dania. He says, "Deterrence, a message that alters the rules of engagement after many years of Israeli aggression against Syria." And we have another comment by Press TV. It reads, "Video purportedly shows Israelis running in panic after missile fired from Syria lands near Dimona nuclear facility." Some lessons might be learned the hard way to leave everlasting impacts. You know what I'm talking about. So let's continue with Dr. Griffin. He says, "Israel is an illegal settlement and has been terrorizing the people of Palestine for decades." We have another comment by Earl. She says, "Israelis are cowards. This is what they do daily to Palestinians, but they are afraid of facing such. And that is why they should get a taste of their own medicine every now and then." We have another comment by Leo Dark Sam. He says, "Israel, the U.S. and Zionists know very well that Israel will not last a single day without the U.S. And the best part is, the U.S. grand strategy is to leave the Middle East altogether to focus on the real threat, which is China. We all know Israel's days are numbered." And we have another comment by Anti-False Flag. It reads, "They are humans after all. I am Christian, but hate what Israel is doing. Judgment Day is coming." That's very true. Soon the day will come when the Zionist leaders will have to stand trial for their crimes against humanity and particularly generations of Palestinians. Let's check out our final batch of tweets. The first one from Terrence Berry. It reads, "Syria and Iran have every right to retaliate against Zionist aggression. Israel plays the victim while bombing all around them." And our final tweet of the day comes from Sacred Christian America Revival. It reads, "Israel keeps sucker punching the Syrian military as it has fought off wave after wave of jihadists since 2011. Yet not one single Israeli airstrike against ISIS. That explains everything." And that's it for today's edition of Hashtag Trending. Hope you liked it. Thanks, and until next time, stay safe and bye-bye.
And I'll continue with more news. Hospitals in India are pleading for oxygen supplies as a record surge in coronavirus infections overwhelms the country's healthcare system. India is gripped by a devastating second wave of the pandemic. Now, the rise in cases has been mainly attributed to a lax of health protocols, sporadic enforcement of mask mandates, and new virus variants. The number of infections across the country rose overnight. by 346,000 now. That sets a new world record for cases for the third consecutive day. Deaths also increased by over 2,600, the highest daily rate for India so far. Crematoriums across Delhi said they were filled and asked grieving families to wait. India has confirmed 16.6 million cases, second only to the U.S. The death toll also stands at close to 190,000. We're going to cross over to New Delhi, joined by Manohar Zamad. Manohar, good to have you with us. Fill us in on the latest situation. It appears to be quite grave.
Good evening, Marzia. Of course, the situation has been turning really lethal from last week because of the fact that government did not anticipate that the second wave is going to be much deadlier than what the first wave was. Because what we saw in the first wave, the health ministry and the central government, they were too overconfident that they have overcome the first wave very confidently. And this is what exactly happened. They took things easy. I mean, they thought with the rollout of vaccination and the cases coming down, everything is going to be smooth. And nothing happened of that sort. It was the reverse of what exactly they anticipated. And the results are quite clear. The hospitals are overwhelmed. The gas is, the oxygen supplies are short. Beds are short in the hospitals. The healthcare system is completely shattered. I mean, there is no space left in the hospitals to accommodate patients. People are hanging in inside the auto rickshaws, somebody in ambulances. And with the shortage of oxygen supplies, there are also reports that oxygen is being looted in many parts of the country. Well, now the government has taken the decision to get the police protection for every oxygen tanker. It's been given a police protection. It's been given an escort now. This is the demand, what the oxygen demand is in the country right now. But what we see today with the latest figures, the trending is changing a little bit, slightly, we can say, not that much. Today, Mumbai registered very less cases as comparison to what it registered yesterday and day before yesterday. Today, it registered some 6,000 cases, which is a big gain, and of course, recoveries as well. But as I said, India is a big country. It's a massive country with a very huge population, and the healthcare system is already ailing and dismal. I mean, you don't have healthcare facilities in every state that can cater to its population because the country spends hardly less than 2% of its GDP on the healthcare system. So even if there is a problem in the outskirts or the rural parts of the country, many people have to flock into the big cities such as Delhi, Mumbai, Pune, and Bangalore sometimes. So this means there's a lot of pressure on these healthcare systems. So they were unprepared. Day before yesterday, as I said in many interviews, the government, the defense ministry, has taken a drastic measure. They have held a meeting in which they said, we are preparing the armed forces. They can help us to contain this new virus. At the same time, they are in talks with Germany. They are importing some oxygen plants, which are portable oxygen plants, which is expected by the next week. So the most important thing that the country is struggling with is supply of oxygen and shortage of beds. That's what is making situation even worse. Back to you.
Okay. Sad situation indeed. Thanks so much. Out of New Delhi, Manohar Zamad. Well, Pakistan has announced strict measures in an attempt to stem the spread of the coronavirus. Authorities say the country may soon be facing a situation similar to that of India if the current surge in COVID-19 cases continues. Javed Rana brings us more from Islamabad.
Pakistan has called out army to help police and other paramilitary personnel to enforce strict precautionary measures in bazaars and streets to contain what the government says a sudden surge in COVID-19 cases.
Agar humne ab ehtiyat na ki.
Prime Minister Imran Khan in a televised address warned the nation that his country may soon be facing a grim situation similar to that of India, where on an average 2,000 people die every day and more than 300,000 test positive.
I have appealed to the people time and again to follow precautionary measures. However, neither people are scared of coronavirus nor they are adopting any precautionary measures. And that is where now there is surge in coronavirus cases.
under a new decision, Pakistan has shut down schools in regions with a surge in COVID-19 cases. All markets would be closed by 6 p.m. Indoor and outdoor dining have also been banned. Only 50% staff would be allowed to work in private and government offices, while offices would be closed at 2 p.m. On an average, 100 to 150 people die daily, while between 5,000 to 6,000 people test positive every day in 220 million populated country. So far, there are as many as 102,000 total active cases in Pakistan, while nearly 16,900 people have died since March last year. The government has warned the people to get ready to face complete lockdown of major urban centers if they do not put a mask on their faces to contain the virus.
People would die with hunger if government shuts down the cities. There would be shortage of food items like sugar, flour, and oil. What would we do then?
A survey conducted by Gallup Pakistan last month reported that 65% people believe that the government is exaggerating the threat of the COVID-19. A significant number of people suffer from allergic-linked diseases such as flu, cough, fever, and asthma, and many of them die every spring weather in parts of Pakistan. However, since March last year, the medical nomenclature in Pakistan have changed, and now most of these diseases have been officially classified as COVID-19 cases under what is medically known as PCR testing system, which many medical experts believe are churning out false positive cases. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
And now to Indonesia, which has recovered debris from a submarine that went missing with the 53 crew member of the coast, off the coast of Bali. Now, according to the Indonesian Navy, the debris includes components and items from inside of the stricken vessel. It said the items were found in the last location where the submarine was diving. Now, the Navy added that the recovered components would not have come outside the submarine if there had been no external pressure without damage to its torpedo launcher. The submarine with 53 people on board lost contact during a drill in the Bali Sea last Wednesday. And with that brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you all so much for staying with us.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has recently warned that humanity stands on the verge of the abyss as the climate crisis pushed the world dangerously close to hitting the 1.5 degrees Celsius target limit of warming. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Andrea Germanus Ryder. This article is published under the heading UN Chief Warns World on Verge of the Abyss as WMO releases climate report. Here's more. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has warned recently that humanity stands on the verge of the abyss as the climate crisis pushes the world dangerously close to hitting the 1.5 degrees Celsius target limit of warming. Guterres delivered the ominous remarks at the launch of the World Meteorological Organization's State of the Global Climate Report, a publication he said should alarm us all. 2020 was one of the three warmest years on record, coming in 1.2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times. And the past 6 years have been the warmest years on the books, the report says. The publication also calls attention to heat records in the Arctic, such as the 38 degrees Celsius on June 20 in Verkhoyansk, which marked the highest recorded temperature north of the Arctic Circle. What's more, despite coronavirus pandemic-related shutdowns in 2020, concentrations of greenhouse gases, including carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide, continue to climb. Further global climate indicators in 2020 noted in the report include extreme events like very extensive flooding in parts of Africa, severe drought in parts of South America, extremely large wildfires, including the biggest ever seen in California and Colorado, and an above-average number of tropical storms. Continuing ocean acidification and deoxygenation were also observed in 2020, and more than 80% of the ocean area had at least one marine heat wave in the year. Also, for just the second time on record, Arctic sea ice extended minimum after the summer melt was covered less than 4 million square kilometers. All key climate indicators and associated impact information provided in this report highlight relentless continuing climate change and increasing occurrence and intensification of extreme events and severe losses and damage affecting people, societies, and economies, said WMO Secretary General Petri Talas. In light of such trends, Guterres said, our challenge is clear. To avert the worst impacts of climate change, science tells us that we must limit global temperature rise to within 1.5 degrees of the pre-industrial baseline, said Guterres, referring to the Paris Climate Accord's more ambitious target of limiting warming. That means reducing global greenhouse gas emissions by 45% from 2010 levels by 2030 and reaching net zero emissions by 2050, he said. Unfortunately, Guterres continued, we are way off track. He added that 2021 must be the year for action and the next 10 years, a decade of transformation. To make that happen, Guterres called on governments to take actions, including switching fossil fuel subsidies to renewable energy subsidies, preventing the construction of new coal power plants, and richer nations supporting climate finance for the developing world. This is truly a pivotal year for humanity's future, said Guterres. Associated Press reported recently that a 50% reduction target from the White House was likely. As CNBC noted, however, that would fall behind commitments by the UK and European Union, which have pledged to reduce emissions by 68% and 55% by 2030. Climate and social justice groups have urged Biden to go well beyond the 50% reduction goal in order to advance an equitable, just and ambitious climate agenda at home and abroad. Friends of the Earth U.S. President Eric Pica said in a statement earlier this month that a fair share that prioritizes the safety and well-being of the most vulnerable in both the U.S. and in developing countries requires the U.S. to cut domestic emissions 70% from 2005 levels by 2030 and provide international finance to enable the equivalent of an additional 125% reductions in developing countries.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, we send our peace and blessings upon all the prophets of Allah, Subhanahu wa Taala. And especially the last of them, Muhammad al-Mustafa and his progeny, and those companions who followed their path. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, and welcome to another program of For a Better Life, here on IRIB English Radio. We were talking about psychological diseases and the anxieties that we can feel within ourselves, in our surroundings, and in our society, and what role faith and religion and the belief in God has in all of this, and how we can reach a peace of mind or mental peace with the belief in God or in religion. Accordingly, a person with faith knows that these bounties that we receive here in this material world are means for attaining to higher ends, and not the end and goal of life itself, in whose pursuit one should spend all his life, and moreover lose his spirituality. The painful stresses produced by anxiety also leads to physical illness, and the loss of physical vigor in order to safeguard one's physical health, dear brothers and sisters, and well-being, and save oneself from the influence of self-destructive forces within one must not allow anxiety and sorrow to overwhelm his or her soul. Let us see what Imam Ali, the commander of the faithful, alayhi salam, says about grief. He says, "Grief and anxiety have a destructive effect on the body." He says, "Grief and agony have a wasting effect on the body." He says, "Drink up or suppress your sorrow and resentment, because it is the sweetest and the most pleasant of drinks from the viewpoint of resolved and ultimate outcome." What he means with drink up here is suppress. Drink up your sorrow and resentment. He means suppress your sorrow and resentment. Why? Because it is the sweetest and the most pleasant of drinks From which viewpoint? From the viewpoint of result and ultimate outcome. Scientific investigations, dear brothers and sisters, have revealed that some physical ailments are the effect of psychic anxieties and outbursts of emotion.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Moon, the well-known psychologist, writes, some of the psychological factors of emotion are evident in everyday experience. The palpitation of the heart, accelerated breathing, a sinking feeling in the stomach, sweating, trembling, and many other organic phenomena are commonly reported aspects of emotion. Milder forms and intensities of emotion provide a motivational background to much that we do. He says, in emergency situations, largely through adrenal secretion, we have energy in excess of that normally present. The emotionally aroused organism is aroused all over. There is an overall interaction of receptors, muscles, internal organs and nervous mechanisms with resulting changes in blood chemistry, in brain waves, and in the physiological reactions already considered. One frequent outcome of prolonged stress, emotional or otherwise, is the production of gastric ulcers. All of these physiological and physical symptoms that we see within our body is due to stress and anxiety. Thus, all of this belongs to the non-material domain. Anxiety, stress, and other psychological diseases that ultimately affects our physical well-being. These two realms, the material and the non-material, are interlinked with each other. If we do not have mental peace, if we do not have mental health, we cannot expect to have a good and healthy body. They are interlinked to each other. The psychic world with the material world. Any psychological stress produces all of those factors that we mentioned within our body. And you will sooner or later see that you have been afflicted by different physical diseases on top of your mental diseases. That which distinguishes the word of a realistic person, dear brothers and sisters, from the word of an immature one is imagination. a superficial and shallow person who has seen only the appearances of things is so much enchanted by his faculty of imagination that his heart is swept every moment by the waves of endless desires. And as soon as he comes to see the course of events as an obstacle in his way, his spirit becomes submerged in a fearsome gloom, and he is put at a complete loss. If this crisis is accompanied with a weakness of the soul, that may lead him to commit suicide. By contrast, the realistic person is free from the bondage of childish and unrealistic notions. Thus, dear brothers and sisters, what we need to do is to fix our set of mind, our expectations, our delusions and imaginations, and not allow them to influence our practical life. Change our way of thinking. Change your way of life. Till next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you.
Your mercy, your love is on our knees. All I need, that's all I need, all I need, all I need. Oh, 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 oh. All I need to be all I need. And I know that you see how much you need. You mean to me, 'cause your love is all I need to be all I can be. I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
The limelight.
The Biden administration's moral missteps and waffling on U.S. refugee policy has revealed a worrisome willingness to treat refugees as political footballs, putting many lives in limbo, says Sasha Bronski, writer in an article titled, Biden's waffling on refugees may leave desperate thousands in limbo. Here's more. The Biden administration's moral missteps and waffling on U.S. refugee policy revealed recently a worrisome willingness to treat refugees as political footballs, putting many lives in limbo and only partially reversing course after intense blowback from centrist Democrats like Senator Dick Durbin. On April 16th, after experiencing a few hours of outcry from congressional Democrats and grassroots organizations in response to Biden's decision to keep Trump's 15,000 cap on refugee admissions for the fiscal year ending this September, Biden made an unexpected about-face. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki announced that the limit on refugee admissions would be increased, but by a yet-to-be-determined amount, with the new number to be announced by May 15th. The Biden administration's initial decision to reimpose those cap on refugee admissions, a cap that progressive lawmakers have decried as unacceptably draconian and discriminatory, came as somewhat of a surprise after Biden's efforts to otherwise unravel Trump's xenophobic policies and regulations. Reverse the stance the government was taking in arguing key immigration cases before the Supreme Court, an attempt to create a more humanitarian process for unaccompanied minors crossing the border without paperwork. Immigration activists who had recently cheered the administration's decision to reverse signature Trump initiatives, such as the new public charge rules that all but barred immigrants from emergency food, housing, and medical assistance, expressed dismay over the Biden administration's initial attempt to impose Trump's refugee policy for the rest of the fiscal year. The ostensible reason for Biden's order on refugee admissions was that the resettlement system is currently overwhelmed with the huge influx of asylum seekers on the U.S.-Mexico border, and that adding tens of thousands of refugees into the mix would overstrain the system. In reality, as Biden and his team know all too well, the two systems are apples and oranges. There are different laws regulating asylum admissions and refugee admissions. Different government agencies and nonprofit systems are involved in the actual resettlement process, and by and large, different pools of money are available to resettle refugees as opposed to processing asylum seekers through the courts. More to the point, as administration officials told the media recently, Biden's team is worried about the political optics of increasing refugee admissions at the same time as so many people are claiming asylum. They worry about public opinion and congressional blowback, and fear it could end up eclipsing all other big-picture reforms and investments that they are seeking to achieve over the coming months. After all, while solid majorities of U.S. voters approve of Biden's approach to COVID-19, to economy, and to infrastructure investments and tax law changes, that majority vanishes when it comes to Biden's approach to immigration and his handling of the surge of migrants to the southern border. In the Trump era, bashing refugees became an easy way for the demagogue-in-chief to whip up his mob. He repeatedly traveled to Minnesota, for example, where many Somali refugees have been resettled, and made racial inflammatory speeches about them, as well as about Representative Ilhan Omar, who arrived in the U.S. from Somalia as a child refugee. Given this history, perhaps it's not entirely surprising that the 46th President of the United States has caved on refugee admissions at the first sign of fragile public support on the issue. But Biden and his team have repeatedly linked U.S. admission of refugees to a broader sense of the country's place in the world. They have, from the get-go, set up refugee admissions as a litmus test for moral values. And recently, they spectacularly failed that test. What made Biden's initial announcement particularly hard to bear was that during his campaign, Biden pledged to raise the annual refugee admissions level to 125,000. Mere weeks after his inauguration, he promised to get halfway to that goal, 62,500 just this year. Biden's team sweetened the announcement about adhering to the 15,000 cap, walking back his commitment to rapidly expand admissions with promises that, because Trump's Muslim travel ban no longer held sway, the refugees would be admitted from places of greatest need, including those fleeing the ghastly civil wars in Syria and Yemen. That's true, but to be honest, it's also largely window dressing. If refugee admissions continue at this historically low level, thousands of individuals and families who have undergone years of vetting and are now just waiting for the final word that they can set up for the U.S. will remain in limbo, in often overcrowded and unsanitary refugee camps overseas for months and quite likely years to come. That's a huge stain on U.S. moral reputation. Moreover, the refugee resettlement infrastructure, which took decades to build after the Second World War and which was largely shredded during Trump's presidency in an act of epic institutional vandalism, won't be easily jump-started again so long as the refugee cap is kept low. That's because with only 15,000 refugees admitted in 2021, the federal funds based on the numbers being resettled won't flow in adequate measure to groups like the International Rescue Committee and World Relief. As a result, these organizations will likely be unable to reopen shuttered offices in cities around the U.S. or to rehire skilled staffers who have been let go during the past 4 years, making it even harder down the road to quickly get up to speed should refugee admissions increase in 2022. The about-face that the Biden administration made after facing blowback from congressional Democrats and activist groups is better than nothing, but in its vagueness, it's still a far cry from the earlier pledge to increase admissions up to 62,500 this year. Around the affluent world, as wars, climate change, population stresses, water shortages, the pandemic, and other crises rage, and as tens of millions of people flee these conditions, governments are battening down their hatches against refugees and asylum seekers. In Denmark, a supposedly liberal government has begun deporting hundreds of Syrian refugees who have lived in the country for years back to Syria. They claim disingenuously that Syria is now no longer dangerous. In the UK, the government is instituting quick deportation policies against asylum seekers that look shockingly close to those adopted in US under Trump. In Australia, would-be asylees and refugees, many of them children, are held in prison-like conditions for years on end. In an island fortress hundreds of miles from the mainland, Biden promised something different, something better. He has now dropped the ball on refugees. Hopefully, the political pushback he has received will help set him on a more ethical course. For whatever the short-term political optics, it's simply wrong to turn desperate refugees into political footballs. have just listened to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. In one of our previous episodes, we mentioned that the holy month of Ramadan is that kafara, or that thing that recompenses between this Ramadan, or everything that happened between the last Ramadan and the one that we are currently in. And we saw that no, it is not something just happens by itself. No, it requires certain conditions to be fulfilled. In one of our previous episodes, we saw that a person should refrain from performing the major or the great sins in order for those minor sins that occurred between these two time periods to be forgiven. In this tradition, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam mentions even further conditions. That it's not just that a person enters into the holy month of Ramadan and then automatically he will be cleansed of all that happened between the previous month and this month. No, it is that there are certain acts and actions that enable a person to be forgiven properly and to be forgiven truly in this blessed month of Ramadan. So in this tradition, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is reported to have said that whoever in the holy month of Ramadan fasts, but not just fast because he has to, out of true iman and with a true belief that this is something that has come from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's something for my own betterment and so on and so forth. And with the expectation, rather the hope of getting reward from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for this fasting. And more importantly, that reward is not something that he expects in this world. That's not to say he may not get it. He may get it in this world. But one can understand that the reward and the physical reward that one attains is something, you know, very low compared to the benefits and the blessings of the hereafter. So the Holy Prophet says that every single person who fasts in the holy month of Ramadan because of true belief and iman and for the hope of attaining the rewards from his Lord, and he then obviously by means of this acts of worship that he does, the sins that he has performed in the past will be forgiven. Hence we see again that there is a condition here. It is not that a person just enters into this specific spiritual, you know, high time, this time that is full of ma'navi and so full of spirituality, that everything will be forgiven. No, this is not the case. That is a case that a person needs to actually put effort in. He has to have the correct intention. He has to, you know, do so because he wants the reward from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and not from the people. He does so because out of true belief and not just because, okay, I've been doing it since a kid, everyone around me is doing it, I just need to follow suit. No, the conditions are there. With these conditions will a person's previous sins be forgiven, not just by means of entering into the holy month of Ramadan. Inshallah, until next time, my dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
The debate.
Head of U.S. Central Command Kenneth McKenzie says Iran possesses one of the most capable militaries in the Middle East. The top general said Iran's ballistic missile force is the most formidable in the region. McKenzie, who testified before the U.S. House Armed Services Committee, said Iran's widespread use of drones means that